Florence and the Machine, Shake It Off, gang. Shake it off. That's what I feel like after impeachment week, that I just got to shake it all off. And we'll be talking more about impeachment later this morning. Let me tell you about our lineup for the day, gang. So we're starting out with Rich Ferraro, who is calling in from New York City about GLAAD. He's been with GLAAD for over a decade, talking about the great work that GLAAD is doing all over the country. And then we're going to have a visit from some of the members of the gay and lesbian Armenians who are very happy about the recent U.S. Congress and Senate resolution, finally calling the Armenian genocide what it was, a genocide. They've been working on that for 50 years. And of course, LGBT lives can be quite complicated in Armenian culture. So we'll be talking to them. And then at the end of the show, we got these two great moms who are coming in who didn't like the fact that none of their kids' schools seem to have any material about LGBT people. So what did they do? As moms often do, mama bears, they got in and went out and found material. And then they gathered donors and they bought books and they made sure that LA Unified was providing literature to elementary and secondary school kids about LGBT lives so that their kids would feel some degree of acceptance in the public schools. I love moms like that. Moms are fantastic. But they'll be in at the end of the show. And it's happy December 20th, 2019. Jason, oh my God.
It's almost Christmas.
Please, I don't have a tree. I don't have a gift. I don't have a thing.
No way.
I got the tree.
Okay, you got the tree.
The tree is up.
Is it a real tree?
It's a real tree.
Okay, I love my
real
trees.
It does not have an ornament on it, but it's there. It's there and it's watered.
There's something about real trees, you know, that smell that comes off of them.
Yeah.
Fills the house.
And I put up my Hanukkah and my Hanukkah candles, and I put up my Kwanzaa dolls. I'm all in.
All right.
I'm all in for the holiday.
Now you just need some ornaments.
That'll happen later today. Gang, let's start out with Rich Ferraro, who's calling in from New York City from GLAAD. Rich, are you on there on the air with us?
I'm here.
Hey, Rich, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
So I was chatting with you before the show got started. I remember when GLAAD got started. One of my colleagues, Carol Anderson, who was an attorney here in Los Angeles, she and I came out of the ACT UP movement. I was one of ACT UP's lawyers back then in the late 80s. And Carol and I think a group of people all over the country got together and said, we need something like the ADL. We need an anti-defamation league for LGBT people. And let's start something. And they called it GLAAD. And you all have been around ever since then. I think the late 80s. I don't remember. Do you know your founding year? I think it's the late 80s.
Yeah, so we were founded in New York City in 1985, so we're going to be turning 35 pretty soon. And in addition to Carol and the folks who you mentioned, Vito Russo was also critical in founding GLAAD.
Celluloid Closet. Yeah, Celluloid Closet author.
Yes.
Wonderful guy. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
And initially, GLAAD got started because stereotypes and myths ranging from pedophilia to, how a gay man is supposed to look and sound, or how a lesbian is supposed to look or sound. I mean, the media was doing us no favors back then in terms of portrayals or caricatures of LGBT people. Like, they got part of it right. Yes, there are effeminate, lisping gay men, and yes, there are ultra butch, dyke lesbians. I have examples of both in my life, and I love them. But there's so much more than just those presentations. So tell us a little bit about GLAAD, why it exists. What's your raison d'etre? Oh, I'm saying it wrong. Your reason to be. Raison d'etre. My French sucks.
Yeah, my reason to be, and my colleagues at GLAAD, our reason to be is to create a world where there's 100% LGBTQ acceptance. And I think you hit on some of GLAAD's founding. The other big impetus for the founding of it was the coverage of HIV/AIDS in the mid-80s, which was just demonizing gay men in the most despicable and inaccurate ways. So one of our first actions as GLAAD was protesting outside of the New York Post, which was just running the most disgusting articles. And it's less about these articles running, and it's more about the impact. So that's what GLAAD focuses on. I always tell people there are LGBTQ organizations that lobby in courtrooms. There are LGBTQ organizations that lobby on Capitol Hill and to lawmakers. We lobby in the court of public opinion, and we do that through the media, because how can you reach the biggest audience of non-LGBTQ people possible? How can you change the most hearts and minds about our community? It's through the media, and that has changed dramatically in GLAAD's life. so what we started out doing, what the founders started out doing, was really working in the newsrooms. Then we spread to LA to work in Hollywood, knowing that if people got to know us, if people got to know LGBTQ people, their hearts and minds would change, and that would pave the way for legal equality. But you can't legislate acceptance. You can't legislate what people are going to be doing at PTA meetings and in schools and how they're going to be voting at the ballot box. So that's what we do today, is we work with all forms of media. And that's really been a huge evolution in my decade at GLAAD, decade plus, which is unbelievable to say. But we've been working through news media, through Hollywood, and then through new forms of media. Obviously, social media is a big focus of us. We also do a lot of work behind the scenes in the video game industry. And when I say work, and when I say work through the media, we push the stories that are going to create change. We push the stories that are going to move hearts and minds. And we do that through our relationships with the media. So we used to be known really as a media watchdog. And I'm sure you've seen, and you still do see, some of the work that when GLAAD calls out a company, when GLAAD calls out a public official or a celebrity.
Hold that thought, because we got to go to commercial break. Gang, we're talking to Rich Ferraro from GLAAD. When we come back, we'll get more into all the great work GLAAD is doing here on Channel Q.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Cyndi Lauper's True Colors. That's what I think GLAAD is all about. Letting us all show our true colors. We're talking to Rich Ferraro from GLAAD in New York City. Rich, welcome back.
Yeah, hi.
You guys were in the middle of the Hallmark Channel storm. And man, what a storm that was. They're in, they're out, they're back, they're forth. What exactly happened at Hallmark?
Yeah, we were in the middle of it. And I'm going to share a real quick tidbit for you that my mom is a manager of a Hallmark store and so proud to work for Hallmark and sends me text messages all the time of pictures of LGBTQ inclusive cards that they have. So it was everything I do at GLAAD is personal, but that was really personal to me. I think the Hallmark Channel really, they fell victim to the 1 Million Moms, which is one of these anti-LGBTQ groups that has been, and in my 10 years of GLAAD, they were always known as fringe, and companies didn't listen to them. We often would give companies even a heads up when the 1 Million Moms quote-unquote attacked that they're not friendly moms. It's really a front for the American Family Association, and those people just wake up every day to make life harder for LGBTQ families. So the Hallmark Channel did not realize, I think that they didn't realize who the 1 Million Moms really were. They thought they were more powerful, and they didn't understand that they're not a group of concerned moms, they're a group of anti-LGBTQ activists, and they fell for it. They pulled that beautiful Zola ad featuring the gay wedding, and then what we did as social media and activism on social media has changed the game for us at GLAAD, because as hashtag boycott Hallmark Channel was trending, we were able to go to the Hallmark Channel with the research about who 1 Million Moms were. We also went to them with research about, here's all the advertisers that do feature LGBTQ families and proudly do. And if you're not going to accept these ads, you're going to miss out on many of them. And then the last big piece of info that we shared with the Hallmark Channel is that GLAAD was going to be going to other advertisers on the Hallmark Channel to ask them where they stood on this debacle and to ask them to pause funding if they stood with the community until there was resolution. I just imagined like young LGBTQ people opening that Hallmark card on Christmas or opening the Hallmark cards for Hanukkah, and I wanted them to see that Hallmark brand and to know that the brand stood with them and not was a brand that wanted to exclude them. So it was really important for us to reverse that. So on Sunday night, the Hallmark Channel decided to reverse the decision. They were open to the Zola ad, and now GLAAD is going to be doing one of the things that we do best, which is consulting with them and pushing them throughout the year to include us in their programming. We have a rightful place on every channel on TV, especially the Hallmark Channel, because I think family-friendly today means including LGBTQ families.
Yeah, well, great job on that. You know, I'm a trained lawyer, and I've learned never to ask a question that I don't already know the answer to, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it anyway. I noticed a headline in one of the local blogs that I read every day to keep current on LGBT issues, something about J.K. Rowling making some transphobic remarks, and I was like, what? I got to read that later. I don't even know what that is, but I imagine you do, and I imagine you're probably preparing a response.
Yeah. So at GLAAD every day, we start our morning 9:30 a.m. New York time. We have a morning briefing where we go over the news of the day with respect to LGBTQ people and how we can play a role in them. So yesterday morning, we all woke up to a tweet that J.K. Rowling sent out, and she hasn't tweeted very much at all this year. It's been
and she's the Harry Potter author, right, for our listeners who may not know.
Okay. Yes. Yep. And she's also the writer of films like Fantastic Beasts and, of course, all the Harry Potter films. And she's beloved and well-respected. And I think she's helped so many young people who felt different to relate to those characters in Harry Potter. And they became real quick fans, especially LGBTQ young people. So she tweeted this really ugly thing about trans women. And I think in the United Kingdom right now, there is a very ugly fight between who we refer to, the community here refers to as TERFs, trans exclusionary radical feminists. These are cis women. Many of them are lesbian or bi women who are cisgender, who don't believe that trans women belong in women in spaces reserved for women. So they're on the wrong side of history on that one. But in the UK, they have a real huge amount of influence amongst influential people like J.K. Rowling. It was clear that J.K. Rowling was borrowing from their talking points in her tweet. And at GLAAD, what we did yesterday was typically when people in the public eye or brands or networks or newspapers run anti-LGBTQ things or inaccurate LGBTQ items, we reach out and we try and see, can we educate you? Can we sit down? With J.K. Rowling, I think her mind would be completely flipped if she sat down with actual transgender people and heard from them about who they are, what it means to be transgender, and why what she said was so harmful. So again, social media is still lit up with members of the trans community and allies who are speaking out against what she said. And she said she's not speaking out anymore. Her team has also said no comment. So I think it's still an open-ended story, but one that's going to continue and should continue, because I think what she said was so harmful to people who aren't well-versed in trans identities, and she reaches so many people around the world. So I do hope that she takes this opportunity to sit down with members of the trans community, whether they be at GLAAD or other organizations, and educates herself. She shouldn't just hear from people who don't like trans people. She should hear from the actual community.
You know, so both of these examples that you're talking about seem like examples of neglect rather than malicious intent. Is that the majority of what you do? Is it just people or media outlets being reckless or not understanding?
It's a mix. One of the most interesting parts of this job, and I think being an LGBTQ activist in general these days, is you never know who you're going to come up against or what you're going to be working on. So we have that morning briefing every morning where we go over it. I do worry these days that anti-LGBTQ activists, remember like Brian Brown, the head of National Organization for Marriage, Tony Perkins, head of Family Research Council, they are really gaining influence in this organization. divisive political and cultural time. Many of them have seats in the White House or have the ears of people who are running government agencies, and that's really dangerous. So there's, as they are gearing up and gaining credibility, we are trying to keep them in check. We're trying to make sure that mainstream media journalists know who they are and can put them into context. And then the other big part of GLAAD's work is more proactive. So I work really in the day-to-day trenches and on rapid response when crisis communication situations like the Hallmark Channel come up. But we have a bureau of GLAAD called the GLAAD Media Institute, and they do trainings around the world. It's something that I think a lot of people don't know GLAAD even does. But we've trained in the last 3 years 10,000 activists and allies around the world on how to use the media and how to do GLAAD's work with the media in your local community or with your own organization. So that's everything from, we had a staff member who helped Australia activists when they were fighting for marriage equality in Australia, to training trans women of color in the South to speak out about the epidemic of violence facing trans women. And then they also consult with Hollywood and with newsrooms in a behind-the-scenes way when they want more information. Because I think there is, amongst a lot of media people today, an interest in telling LGBTQ stories, but they want to do so in a responsible way and in a way that's going to have impact. So our team in the GLAAD Media Institute works with them in a proactive way to do just that.
Let me ask you, since you brought it up, social media. So Twitter, Instagram, and other apps like that have individuals who have large followings of people, but they don't have paid advertisers. So using the leverage of advertisement or withholding advertising dollars disappears. What happens if a prominent rapper or a young millennial with a huge following or Donald J. Trump, you know, put something out that millions of people read? Is there a role for GLAAD when that happens?
Yeah, when that happens, my phone lights up and media are looking for a response for the community. So oftentimes we play that role, or sometimes we'll even direct to another organization because they might be the better face for it. But I think it's important to keep people like that in check. With Donald J. Trump and the Trump administration, everyone's focused on the circus that's happening right now in D.C., and I can't get the same level of attention for the anti-LGBTQ actions that the administration has put forward. Things like the food stamp program that disproportionately affects LGBTQ people. Things like stripping away rights for federal employees who are LGBTQ. Standing up for so-called religious exemptions and religious freedom. The administration has systematically been trying to roll back anti-LGBTQ protections, and no one in the mainstream media is checking them. So what we've tried to do is we have a page, GLAAD.org/Trump, and we're documenting that for journalists and for the general public so that voters can be equipped with, okay, well, is Trump for the LGBTQ community? I saw him hold up a rainbow flag once. It's like, no, actually here are over 125, I think we might be at 130 now, attacks from Trump or the Trump administration in rhetoric and in policy against LGBTQ people. So we try and give the facts, whether you're a journalist or a member of the general public, to make sure that you're equipped to hold Trump and anti-LGBTQ activists accountable.
That's awesome. You know, my friend Bill McDermott would kill me if I didn't ask this next question. If somebody wants to donate or support the work of GLAAD, what is your website? How do they get a hold of you? How do they become a member? Tell us about that.
Yeah. And donations, we need donations to keep this work alive, and it's growing as anti-LGBTQ groups are growing, but also we need people to just follow us on social media, because we are going to need armies of people to take action when anti-LGBTQ things happen. So GLAAD, and you could donate at GLAAD.org or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, any of the social media platforms.
Remember that, gang. Two A's, Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, GLAAD. Rich, you've been a wonderful guest. I hope you have a wonderful holiday and a very happy new year.
You too.
And good luck to GLAAD in 2020. We need you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, guys. Happy New Year. When we come back, we'll be talking about the evangelical publication that called Donald Trump out. About time. Here on Channel Q.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Gang, we are back. Big news today. But I've got my friend John Bozeman calling in from the road. John, are you there?
I am here. What's going on?
You are there. You are so quick to respond. Here I am. We're in the commercial break. I'm thinking, I need one of our LGBT Christians who's been in and out of reparative therapy to discuss this next issue with me. And I thought, I wonder if John Bozeman's available. There you are.
I'm right here. Well, I'm on the road, and we're not. We haven't pulled over, so we're in Utah. Service sucks.
Oh,
so
my God.
Just know that. Maybe say that before we go live. How long do we go live?
We are live. We're on the air now. There are 30,000 people listening to you right now,
well,
John.
You know what?
30,000 people just heard me.
he did not get
the fact that we're live.
You didn't get a proper introduction, so let me give that to you.
All right, give him a proper introduction. There we go. There we go. John Bozeman, ladies and gentlemen.
Hi, guys.
All right. So here's the issue, John, and here's the issue to our listeners. Christianity Today, which is a very influential evangelical magazine, came out a couple of days ago saying that Trump should be removed from office. Now, okay, you got to understand, these evangelicals, they march in lockstep. And for that to happen, so I'm going to quote from the article. This is a quote from the article. The president of the United States attempted to use his political power to coerce a foreign leader to harass and discredit one of the president's political opponents. This is not only a violation of the Constitution, more importantly, it is profoundly immoral. Wow.
Yeah.
And then they went
on
and they said, this is to the readers of the publication, to the many evangelicals who continue to support Mr. Trump in spite of his blackened moral record, we might say this. Remember who you are and whom you serve. Consider how your justification of Mr. Trump influences your witness to your Lord and Savior. Man, oh man, that took some backbone. That took some spine for the editor of that publication. It was started,
absolutely,
I think, by the Reverend Billy Graham. What I mean, when because I was raised Catholic, so it's, you know, it's not quite as hardcore as evangelical Christian.
Yeah, ex-evangelical here.
Yes, I know, and that's why I wanted to ask you. So, for somebody to actually step out and be courageous, what do you think it finally took for this editor to get the backbone to speak up?
It's really hard for me to know. Like, part of me thinks that it was just this political move to cover their asses, possibly, because of the impeachment. But maybe they've been sitting on this for a while. And I remember they mentioned in the article that they were waiting to let people have their own opinion because they know how influential they are. So there's that. But let me just tell you, the second I read that article,
I sent a text to my dad and was like, well, do you see it now?
Right.
So I was pretty excited that that article came out, for you, sure.
You know, from the moment that he...
You know, their motivation.
The moment he mocked and made fun of that disabled journalist, when I saw that, I was so angry and heartbroken, and I thought, what coarse crassness have we come to as a nation where a candidate for the president of the United States thinks it's okay to mock somebody living with a disability? I mean, talk about the ultimate act of bullying, and yet evangelical Christians rushed to his side. And I'm like, did you not see what he did?
What did he do?
Oh, Jason, this journalist who has a form of cerebral palsy.
Oh,
Donald
gosh.
Trump got on the air and made a hand motion like he had cerebral palsy hand.
Are you kidding?
And he mocked him.
Well, wow. And the second that they gave evangelicals or whoever, Trump followers, a way out to, you know, they're like, oh, no, he didn't really do that. Like, they're so quick to want to justify him. I mean, I see the same pattern with their leaders in their churches or their pastors. You know, if their pastors say something incendiary or whatever, they just say things like, well, he tells it like it is. Like, there's no actual thought. Like, what do you call it? Like, there's no debate inside the head of what is right or wrong. They are so used to, they are programmed to be told what to think. And so this is just kind of the last big boom of that kind of thought, so people can catch on and be like, hey, people are that easily convinced to just follow this crowd. You know, that's what it's scary.
It is scary. I mean, between, you know, grabbing her by the... can't even say it on the air. I'm sure it's prohibited, you know, or putting children in cages or cutting food stamps to the poor or stoking far-right nationalism. I mean, how can Christians align themselves with this political vitriol? That's
right.
The
well,
thing.
Ideally, now this article gives them permission, because apparently they need that, to think outside of that, because they've been like, they've themselves, their brains are in cages, honestly. I mean, it's still their fault for not going beyond that, but there's that too. Hopefully this article gives them permission to step outside of that box.
Yeah,
I wonder if how many of them know that deep in their hearts, but they're just not saying anything.
Yeah, that's so true.
You know,
John, we got to go to commercial again, but I want to thank you for calling in from the road of Utah.
Yeah.
Have a very happy Christmas and a happy new year with your family.
Me too. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
It was nice
I'm
to have
glad reception last week.
I'm just glad you didn't say anything really ridiculous when you didn't realize you were on the air.
Yeah, that's true. That would happen. Thanks for it. I'm glad I asked before I started to speak my weird, direct truth.
Yeah. All right, gang. When we come back, more about what's happening in our world today here during impeachment week on Channel Q.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
So, gang, welcome back. We are here in studio, and Jason and I just noticed there is not one holiday decoration in this studio.
No, I'm a little upset right now. What's going on here?
You know, we share the floor with K-Rock, and they've got rock and roll, like Christmas trees, and K-Earth, and they got Santa Clauses and snowmans. And
even The Wave, too, 94.7.
The jazz station. Yep. They've all, and the LGBT station. Now, Halloween, we killed it.
We smashed it. We brought in a ghost guest?
Yes. we and there was lots of decorations. And there, in fact, there's still a pumpkin right there on the shelf. Oh my God, left over from Halloween.
Well, you just picked up a candy corn off the floor.
Yeah, I did. And that's crazy. I mean, you know, next year we're going to make sure we do up this place because, hey, if it wasn't for us, there'd be no elves.
I agree with you. 1,000%.
Oh, how funny. So we were chatting earlier with John Bozeman about the Christianity Today article, and it really brings up an important issue, and I guess Jason and I are going to chat about it. Well, Jason, you're on the spot, millennial.
I hate to
put you on the spot.
I'm here. What's popping? Right.
So, okay, this is where your older friend said, this is one of those trudging through the snow stories, okay?
All right.
Yeah, when I was, no, I'm kidding.
Not
that bad. Not that bad. But the founding fathers and mothers, when they put together the Constitution, they put in the First Amendment about separation of church and state, and that was Thomas Jefferson, who really pushed to keep the state and the church separate. Why? Because they had come from Europe, mm-hmm. where they had watched Europeans fighting brutal internecine, you know, bloody wars over religion. You know, in England, between the Brits and the Scots, you know, Queen Elizabeth and Queen Mary, one was a Catholic, one was a Christian, people were getting their heads chopped off for being the wrong religion. You know, there were the Crusades, the Spanish going around killing everybody all across Europe because they weren't Catholic. Jews, of course, constantly on the run from the pogroms. I mean, religion was used to slaughter thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, right? So they saw that. They came from that, and they said, okay, we need to keep the church, the bishop on the chessboard, away from the king and the queen, right?
Yeah.
Got to keep the power away. And so part of the reason was to keep the church having over influence on politics. But the other flip side of that was to protect religion from how dirty politics is. And Donald Trump is the glaring example of how dirty politics can be. And now it's besmirching religion. People are thinking, looking at religious people like you're in with the devil, basically.
Well, why is religion getting tied in with this?
Well, they shouldn't. It all started, the moral majority. Mm-hmm. Okay, religion's always been around, right, since the founders. But it was really in the early 80s when Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson and Paul Weyrich started something called the moral majority, where they realized, the Republican Party realized, their agenda of big business, big corporations, was not popular with the common people, with the middle class. Right. They needed to figure out how to expand their electoral base. And they saw this largely untapped group of people.
Market?
Yes.
Quote, unquote.
Religious people, evangelicals and Christians and others who were not really active, but they ended up developing a campaign to bring them in. And, you know, Roe versus Wade, the abortion rights started in 73, was really never under attack till the moral majority formed itself. And gay people weren't really under attack. We weren't even in people's minds at all
until
the moral majority showed up during Ronald Reagan's presidency. Mm-hmm. And suddenly they had a great wedge issue to force culture wars, which we're still in the middle of. You know, and it's been kind of gross because I think a lot of people look at it and hold their nose at organized religion. Like, mm-hmm. organized religion is tainted and dirty and just as evil. And I mean, especially when you cuddle up to somebody like Donald Trump.
Well, yeah. You know, religion is all about perspective anyways, right? Because, you know, you I'm sure growing up you had a hard time with religion, right?
I was an altar boy. I was a Catholic.
Oh, so you did.
Yes.
So
I sang in the church choir, and you know, but we were never in politics. I was raised Catholic. I did all Catholic school, but we weren't really politics.
Well, hold on. What got you into politics?
Oh, now that's another. That's going to take longer than the 2 minutes we've got left till the top of the hour. It's primarily
HIV. Long story, huh?
Yeah, long story. It was HIV and AIDS. The AIDS epidemic hit in the mid-80s, and everybody was dying, and I had to get involved, and that's how I jumped into politics.
And you just felt like this is your calling, like you had
to
go out there.
Well, I was in law school, so, you know, I was preparing to become a lawyer, and
sure, that was brutal in itself. My gosh.
And then we had this epidemic hit, and it's like, okay, we need to change the law. How do you change the law? I remember conjunction, what's your function? And then there was another one called, these after-school special called I Am a Bill. And it's like, you know,
oh, that
legislature.
One song, right?
Yeah.
I remember seeing that early in my
youth. Yes, this was public education television in the 1960s. And anyway, I remember then, oh, so there's like the legislative branch and the executive branch and the judiciary. I mean, it's basic civics.
Right.
But it was never relevant to my life. And I realized, okay, to create laws, you got to impact the legislative body. Legislative bodies are made by campaigns. That's what Democrats and Republicans fight about. And I had to walk it backwards.
I love your thought. thought process, how you just thought to yourself in law school, I need to do something to get myself out there and change the system it's in, because it's not right right now.
And I was your age.
Yeah.
I was in my 20s when that happened. I know. Well, hey. I know. Look at me now. Look at me now. I know.
And you're looking good, buddy.
Four, whatever. I'm older than your mother, we found out this morning. I'm not happy about that. I am not happy about being older than your mother. Now I do feel like daddy on the air. Yeah, so anyway, it's interesting to me that finally this Christianity Today, a publication founded by the late Reverend Billy Graham. Billy Graham was a friend to all presidents. He was a friend to the Clintons. He was a friend to Barack Obama. He was a friend to the Bushes. He was a friend to the Reagans. He tried to keep himself out of the partisan squabble. His son Franklin, who's now running the show, completely snuggled up to Donald Trump, completely and totally snuggled up to Donald Trump, which just is so gross to me. It really makes a mockery, I think, of religion. It makes a lot of people like me say religion is bad again.
Yeah, religion and politics are not something that should
mix together. No. And I'm a very spiritual person, and I believe in God. I believe in the Jesus guy, and I follow my still religious practices. But I don't want that involved. It's very personal. I don't want it involved in my politics. Like I would not be quoting. Well, I might be quoting Jesus about the lepers and the prostitutes who he befriended. But I think a lot of leftists, if we look carefully, that Jesus guy was pretty radical. He was about overthrowing Rome, overthrowing the Jewish synagogues, overthrowing the religious leadership of the day, creating a whole new idea about taking care of the poor and the vulnerable and the sick and the lame and the prostitutes. That's pretty progressive for the year zero.
Yeah.
or negative 35. Yeah, 35 BC. Yeah. Yeah, so there you go.
All right, a little history lesson.
A little history lesson. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Armin Abelian from the Gay and Lesbian Armenians about the historic vote on the Armenian genocide. Thanks for tuning in here on Channel Q.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
A little Armenian music to set us off right. Welcome, Armin Abelian, back to the show, to the sidebar. Do you know what that music is? We have no idea.
Thank you, John. I was wondering.
Jason
sounded very familiar.
Yeah.
I'm sure I've heard it before.
Yeah, good job, Jay.
So look, when I was looking online, it said it was Armenian folk lernapar? What is that?
What's that last word?
Lernapar. Lernapar. Do you know what
Lunapar? It's an Armenian traditional dance.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's a very, call to arms type of.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. That's very appropriate for you coming back on the show. Good job, Jay.
Hey. Yes, great job.
I knew exactly what I was doing.
All right.
So, Armin, the last time I saw you, I think, or time before, it was April. We were on Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles protesting about the. It was the annual commemoration of the Armenian genocide,
April 24th.
And there we were on Wilshire Boulevard. And I ran into you, and there
with
we
your
are
friends.
Out there. Yes, we were protesting together and to show a little LGBT presence in the middle of this big Armenian protest march. Yeah.
Yes, and the community really appreciates. Yeah. That you representing West Hollywood have been with us since the beginning.
Well, absolutely. But yes, I think that some people may not realize what it is that we're talking about. So World War One happened, and World War One, millions of Armenians were slaughtered by Turkey. I mean, they were forced to march, and they were hungry and starving. And
I like to draw parallels, and it's kind of uncanny what's going on. So it was the Ottoman Empire, which has overextended itself, and kind of was going through tough times, and it was looking for scapegoats, and it was pointing at minorities and saying, oh, only if we get rid of the Christians, things would be better. Only if we got rid of the Armenians or the Greeks or the Assyrians, things would be better. And then one day when the Young Turks took over, it's a foreign political party, I mean, they kind of orchestrated the genocide, and on April 24th, they gathered up all the Armenian intellectuals, community leaders, and elected officials, and just killed him and then came back and kind of prepared in continuous fashion. They gathered up people, gassed and killed them and deported them. They said, oh, you can't be here. We're going to deport you actually what they do to Kurds. They're cleaning up a section, a buffer zone.
Ethnic cleansing, right?
Yeah, back in the day.
World War I style.
Yeah, we're not going to really kill you. We're just going to have you march through desert for thousands of miles. And
right, until you figure out where you're going.
And,
or water.
Water. And then they killed and looted people on the way. And 1.5 million people actually perished. And
oh, my gosh.
Yes,
yeah, 1.5
yes.
million Armenians. And the world never recognized that. I mean, it was, in essence, the precursor for what would happen then to the Jews in World
yes.
War II.
Actually, at the time, and we have the Far East Relief Foundation, which is more than 100, I think it's 110 years old or so, but it was specifically created by the Wilson administration to take care of the refugees that were scattered in the region because of the mass deportations and killings. And actually, Associated Press and the New York Times had hundreds and hundreds of articles talking about the issue. And the ambassador to the Ottoman Empire, Henry Morgenthau, he wrote a book about it, and he was one of the vocal U.S. People who would raise the issue and say this an ethnic cleansing is going on in Armenia. He sent many cables to the State Department, to the president. He tried to lobby the Turkish government to allow for these people to be kind of, in a way, moved more properly, but it fell on deaf ears until it was too late. But many countries in the world, I think the number is most countries in the Western Hemisphere have recognized the genocide, and recently United States kind of unofficially joined community.
The House and the Senate both recently voted in the last few months to recognize
right.
that the Armenian genocide occurred.
Right, and it's kind of incredible that it was a bipartisan effort in the House and in the Senate. It was 11 Republicans who voted against it, but only 11 in the House. And then in the Senate, it was unanimous. That doesn't happen nowadays.
That doesn't happen.
Nothing bipartisan
and nothing
happens.
Nothing happens unanimously
yeah.
anymore in the Senate.
Right.
But I think what it was, the reason it hadn't happened before, is that Turkey has a very critical spot in between the Middle East and Europe
right.
in terms of the United States having bases in Turkey.
That's true.
And that was the reason that politicians on both sides were fearful to do anything
yes.
that they thought might irritate Turkey.
Might irritate it, but they've been terrible allies to the United States in the fight. In the Middle East, because they've been funding and fighting with ISIS against the Kurds and the United States.
Yep.
But somehow we have bases there and we have to do what they say.
Yeah, and now, of course, Turkey is cuddled up with Syria and Russia. Thank you, Donald Trump. And so,
it's sad. I hope history doesn't repeat itself as it has many times.
Me too. I mean, we already kind of see it with the Kurds happening again.
So unfortunate.
Again. We got to go to commercial. When we come back, we'll talk about gay and lesbian Armenians and life here in Southern California for you. Thanks for tuning in, gang, here on Channel Q. Okay,
all right.
Start dancing, baby.
Yeah. Go, John.
Yeah, yeah.
Get it, John. Get it.
I'm going to invite you to an Armenian wedding one day.
I would love to.
Hey. You'll see how it's done.
All right. Armenian music, because we're talking with Armen Abelian here. I first met him through Gay and Lesbian Armenians. Galas is what you were called back then, I think.
Galas, yes. Gay and Lesbian Armenian Society. I was the president. And then now I'm with Equality Armenia.
Which is so cool.
Yeah.
Well, I know that here in Southern California, we have a lot of exposure to the Armenian culture because Los Angeles is, in terms of the United States, the largest gathering of Armenian refugees and community in the country.
United States.
They're scattered. Armenians are all over the country, I think.
Right, but the largest community is in Los Angeles.
It's
and
here.
The most organized one.
Now, is it tough to be openly gay or lesbian in Armenian society and culture?
You know, it still is, but in Los Angeles, it's not as bad because we live in one of the most liberal cities of the most liberal state, and things have changed really fast in the last maybe two decades. But as far as the case is in Armenia, it's still is a big deal.
In Armenia, do they prosecute or execute gay and lesbian? Or?
Since 2003, and this was President Robert Kocharyan, who's on trial right now for corruption, actually decriminalized homosexuality or sodomy laws in 2003. And it's not against the law, but it's very tough for LGBT people in Armenia because they're being discriminated against. There are no laws protecting them. And although Armenia recognizes marriages that are legal abroad in Armenia, but they don't extend the same courtesy or the same rights to their citizens.
Is there an influential religious base? What is it? Is it Christian, Muslim?
It's Ardatux, I was going to say. It's the first Christian country on the face of the earth, and they're very proud to be the first country 9 years before Rome that adopted Christianity, and they cling to that very dearly. And that church is the longest running organization in the world, and they're very much against any type of change. So they try to influence what's going on in the country, and they're very much involved in the processes, although state and church should be separate.
Right, that's
the same in Armenia. But
in current modern-day Armenia, in the time of Jesus, would it have been Assyria? Assyrians?
No, it's 2,000 years ago.
Yeah, just
yes.
curious.
So the capital of Armenia right now, Yerevan, was founded in it's just celebrated its 2800 anniversary.
Wow.
So Armenia
has been amazing.
Yeah, it's one of the oldest countries in the world and one of the top 10 oldest languages in the world, along with Lithuanian and Aramaic and Yiddish and a few other old languages. So we've been around for centuries before Jesus, and it goes back, 5-6 centuries of recorded history in the region.
Very interesting.
Yeah, and we've been side by side with the Assyrians, and the last of them were murdered by the Ottoman Empire, and they don't exist. They don't have a state, and they're scattered, and few of them remain. It's really sad. Some of them in current-day Armenia, in the region, there's a very small community in the United States. Yeah.
Equality Armenia, are you active today? And if so, what is on your work plan for the upcoming year?
All right. So I was in Armenia this summer, and I met with the leaders of LGBT and human rights organizations in Armenia. And it's incredible the work that they do. And as an organization that we're modeling ourselves to be an umbrella organization that helps organizations in Armenia. We provide them a voice and resources. We put them in touch with people who can help them, elected officials here of Armenian descent or not, who are friends of the Armenian community. And they go on business missions or delegations to Armenia. And we kind of educate them on what's going on in Armenia and who are the players and what are the stakes for the LGBT community. And we also support organizations here. We've supported Gallus, and we provide, I'm really proud of our social media presence, and we do an incredible job of highlighting our allies and identifying our foes and just showing a better example how things should be done. That's Equality Armenia on Instagram and Facebook. And check out our page. It's, we have really good resources, and we try to inspire people, and we try to give hope to people who are in the closet or young and think their lives cannot be as fully, developed because they have to keep themselves in the closet. And we say it gets better. We give them hope, and we show them how it's done.
Is there the pressure in Armenian culture, like a lot of Asian and Latin cultures, to marry, have children, create a family, on the family name?
Yes, and it's a misconception in Armenia right now that the population growth is you know, threatened because of the LGBT community, but it's actually the corruption and inequality in genders.
That's an actual argument in Armenia?
Yes.
That somehow
yes,
gay people are a threat?
Yes, because we need to repopulate and gay people are a threat. But
oh my
when
gosh.
You do actual scientific studies, women tell men and whoever is taking the study, they're not having more children because they're worried about corruption and they're worried about their financial stability, the economic future of the country. And that's why they're not, you know, having two, three, four kids. They're sticking to one. So for any country to kind of address that, you cannot blame it on a small percentage of the population.
Right, right.
That's not the case. It's just to make economy available for more people and root out corruption. That's one way to encourage, you know, population growth.
Women in Armenia, are they subjected to restraint about being mother and homemaker, or are now women finally becoming career-oriented and higher education like
yes.
other places?
So when I was there, I noticed that change. The younger generation is just better educated and they're more worldly, but the highest value of women, it's kind of portrayed as it's motherhood, which is very admirable, and I think that's an admirable thing, to be a mother, to raise the next generation. But to say that that's your only track, and if you do anything else, you're a lesser of a woman or a human being, it's very unfortunate. Everyone should follow their path, and if they decide to prioritize their careers or whatever other gifts they have to give to society, then more power to them. But I do admire women who become mothers and who raise the next generation. We have to give them all the tools to do that well. And economic well-being is one way, and that's what Armenia should pursue.
Tell us, we've got less than 30 seconds, about how people want to get in touch with you or Equality Armenia, your website, your
yes,
Instagram.
So equalityarmenia.org and also Equality Armenia on Instagram and Equality Armenia on Facebook and Twitter. And we have email addresses there, or there are many ways you can message us. And we like putting people in touch with resources and with other people. So
wonderful. Yeah. Will we have a march April 24th still?
Yes,
we will. Even though the government yes. finally passed the resolution.
People ask, what are you going to do now? And, you know, I wish we had more time, but we demand that the Turkish government, pay reparations just like the German government.
Will you come
did.
Back in April? We'll talk about it right before the march.
I would love to.
We'll have
yes.
you back. We'll have you back. Gang, when we come back, Kiko Feldman and Morgan Walsh, moms who stood up for their kids getting books in the public schools. Thanks for tuning in here on Channel Q. Coat of Many Colors by Dolly Parton, another mama bear who cares deeply about her LGBT friends. Gang, we have in studio Morgan Walsh, who is with us, and Armin Abelian from Armenians, Gay and Lesbian Armenians, is still in there in the studio with us. Welcome to the show, Morgan.
Thank you so much, John. I'm happy to be here.
So I read about you and Kiko Feldman in the LA Times. I'm like, I need to get these women on the show.
That was big press for us. That it was a big deal.
Tell the listeners about the LA Times and what the story was about.
Sure. So, again, I'm Morgan Walsh, and my partner, Keiko Feldman. We're co-founders of Gender Nation. We're a 501c3 in California that donates LGBTQ-affirming books to public school libraries. We're both moms. We're very passionate about this. We want these books in the library amongst all the other stories, so a kid who maybe doesn't have support at home can go in a library and find their experience reflected back to them.
Well, you are like saviors. You're really great. That is fantastic work.
Thank you. We're very passionate about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that is. I think back to when I was a kid. I had one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish. That's about all I had in grade school.
That's a couple of the colors of the flag.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. You brought some books here today. What did you bring?
So we donate 17 books in our sets. We usually partner with the school district themselves. Sometimes we'll present the superintendent with what books we'd like to donate. And in the last 10 years, there's been a ton of beautiful books written. And so we've got a couple of them here. One is called It's Okay to Be Different by Todd Parr. A lot of our stories are just benign, beautiful stories about being yourself. I think Mr. Rogers talked about how important it is just to let kids know they're okay exactly as they are.
And these books are for elementary school level?
Yeah, so right,
that's
we
amazing.
Are with the right funding, and I'll tell your listeners, gendernation.org, you can donate. But right now we have an elementary school list, so K through sixth grade. I mean, as you can see, it's okay to do something nice for yourself. It's okay to get mad. It's okay to lose your mittens. Like, that's what this book is.
Right.
Just reminding kids that it's okay to be different, because we all have felt different.
Right, right, you know? Yeah, yeah.
And that's really an important part of our mission as well. These aren't just for LGBTQ plus kids. They're for all kids.
Right.
Right?
Very, very true.
And the more we normalize the experience, the more we minimize bullying.
I live across the street from West Hollywood Elementary School. So I see the kids out there all the time, and they just started drag queen...
Story hour.
Story hour.
Yeah.
I was like, what is going on at the elementary school?
That would be the exception to the rule that they do that at the school, but that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing to me, though. Amazing to me, the progress being made.
There is. And we, you know, in California, there's something called the Fair Education Act. So it's important to have representation in educational materials. And at Gender Nation, we're not informing the curriculum. We are donating to a school library for kids to find these books on their own.
Do you have any pushback from any parents or faculty or administrators?
Yeah, we have. And I, you know, I'm hesitant to name names, so I won't. But sure, we have had some pushback. And this other book that I brought for you today, which is called Pride, The Story of Harvey Milk and the Rainbow Flag by Rob Sanders. It's a gorgeous book. And this book in particular, when it was reviewed by a certain district, they'd put these tabs on pages where they were concerned. And when I got on the call with this district, he said, "This is the one book I want you to pull." And I said, "For us, it's really important that we have stories not just about, you know, animals, or it's very important to have stories about real people."
Right.
And martyrs and heroes like Harvey Milk, who is an incredible civil rights activist. So he took issue with the fact that Harvey Milk was assassinated.
Mm.
And I told him when I got his email, I called my own children into the room and I said, "How did you learn that JFK died?" And they said he was assassinated. And they're 12, 10, and 8. And I said, "How did you learn that Martin Luther King died?" And they said he was assassinated. So I brought that up to this gentleman on the phone, and I said, "We are teaching kids about assassinations, and it's important. It's an important part of our history."
Yeah. Yeah.
And he said, "You're right. Thank you."
Oh, wow. So that's great that he was talked into it. That's awesome.
Yes. And he was glad.
Yeah.
He was glad.
Interesting that he would use a moment of violence as the excuse to get around teaching about a historic figure. The U.S. Navy just decided they're going to name a ship after Harvey Milk.
Really?
Yes, yes, up in San Francisco.
Oh, that's awesome.
So when the United States Navy is about to name a ship, I'm sure you can do a book called Pride and Harvey Milk and the Story of the Rainbow Flag.
And, you know, I identify the pronouns I use are she, her, hers, and I identify as a woman, and I brought that up to him, too. I said, you know, I would have really killed to have more books about female heroic figures when I was growing up. And, you know, it's so obvious to me that having representation in our education materials makes a difference.
You know, Hermione Granger, I think, is the most prominent heroic feminine figure for all of us.
Yeah.
She's smart. She's brilliant. Without Hermione, Harry, we're talking about Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I hope you know that.
I get it.
Oh, you're my millennial. Yeah. Of course you got this. You got this. Hermione is the brains of the whole operation, which is great, rather than her being the damsel in distress.
It's true. It's huge, but she is a fictional character.
Right.
So it's like, let's get some RBG in there.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes, yes. I actually got my Ruth Bader Ginsburg Christmas ornament yesterday.
Yes! That's awesome.
Gang, we got to go to commercial. When we come back, more with Morgan Walsh and about the incredible work she's doing in the public schools here on Channel Q. All right. I picked Alice Cooper's Only Women Bleed, Morgan, for you and Keiko, because I think that moms go through the biggest heartbreak about their LGBTQ kids or worry that their kids are not going to be safe.
Yeah.
Is that what got you into this work?
Yeah. I have three kids, and my oldest, when he was in first grade, so now he's 12, but when he was in first grade, he came to me and he said, Mom, I don't know any other kids like me. And at the time, you know, he hadn't put words to his own experience. We were just watching him, his dad and I, and trying to set up this padded perimeter, we called it, just trying to let him know whoever he is great, but we also struggled with, we don't live in a bubble, and are people going to be mean to him, you know? And when you have a little first grader who's walking around with their American Girl doll, it's like you just want them to feel like there's nothing wrong with it, because there isn't.
Right. Yeah. And that was your first indicator? He had a...
There were lots of things. I mean, as a mother, and if there are any moms out there listening, there's lots of quiet moments where you go, and sometimes it's just an internal feeling. But yeah, he wanted to bring his American Girl doll to show and tell. He loved dresses. He loved my purses. He loved my shoes. So those were indications early on.
My niece has a son, and when he was 5, he admired Elsa from Frozen.
Yeah.
He would dress up as Elsa, right? He would spin like Elsa. He was freezing things like Elsa from Frozen. And now he's 11, and now suddenly he's doing sports and other things. And so she's like, I don't know if I have a trans kid, a gay kid, or a straight kid. I don't care.
That's exactly it.
Right.
I mean, I would say these were indicators for us, but they don't necessarily mean anything for anybody.
You never know. I know. It's so true. And she would ask me, she goes, do you think I have a trans kid? I'm like, Valerie, I love that you're just asking.
I have
no idea. Let's let him grow up. Let him grow up.
Yeah. Follow his lead.
Yeah. Well, Keiko Veldman is now in the studio as she's joining us. Keiko, we're live on the air. Put those earphones on and welcome to the show. Welcome, Keiko.
Say hi.
Yeah.
Hi.
We were just talking about how you moms got involved and why you got involved. So tell us a story about your son and what happened.
My son, his name is Zach. He came out when he was 15 years old and came out on social media, was super strong and ready and proud and has a really positive story. But I met Morgan and we talked about how amazing it would have been for these kids to get that messaging earlier. And so I was in. I was 100% in.
And you were like, really? You got to do social media first? Like, you can't, like, I know. And then you said he's not regretted it.
No, his story is, you know, kind of the ideal, where he worked really, really hard in school. He made a lot of friends. He kind of felt like he was safe. And then he was just ready. And it was Instagram and Facebook. And I was like, do you want to tiptoe into this a little bit? He's I'm here. I'm ready. I'm done.
And he was in a California public school, correct?
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, where the heart of our work is to try to spread this message through California.
It is. And we were super lucky to have that school be the first school district that let us kind of donate on a district-wide level.
Well, you know, I know for a lot of like kids, okay, our generation, okay, and I'm older than both of you, but I think...
So much older.
But I think that a lot of the stories, like usually the Disney stories, for example, it's always about Aladdin meeting Jasmine or, you know, Peter Pan meeting Wendy. And there's always a male, female. And I only could identify with the villains, like Jafar, Queenie Jafar from Aladdin.
Oh my God.
I was like, I get it. Or Captain Hook or Ursula from The Little Mermaid.
The villains are sometimes really fabulous.
Well, the villains I think are spectacular. I was a big villain person.
Showmanship.
The villains are the interesting part of the story. But there was never obviously a same gender love story ever being told. So I had to learn it later. And
that's changing though.
It is changing.
So exciting.
Which is, I mean, these books, like we were just going over some of these Annie Platt shirts. Is about.
This is a great book about a girl who just wants to wear a plaid shirt and went to a family event. And when she tries to put on the dress, it doesn't feel right to her. And she feels awkward and she's uncomfortable. And her family is at first like, wear the dress. And then they see her for who she is. And she's like, no, I need to rock a plaid shirt, please.
Right.
And they make that happen.
Well, Little Orphan Annie, I am sure, was a lesbian because she was amazing, amazing character.
Well, and you pointed out you're looking at stories and longing for that relationship. And a new book that we're very excited to have on our list is called The Bravest Night in the World.
Yeah, The Bravest Night That Ever Was. I begged Morgan. I think you FedExed it to your house and I was like, you have to read this book.
The author reached out to us after seeing some of the work that we do, and we love this story. And it's
because it's a fantastic story, and the character happens to be gay, but it is not it's not the focus of the book. The
right.
book is,
it's not a
this
coming
is a
out
fantastic
story.
Or,
yeah.
story.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's why we so fell so hard in love
yeah.
with it.
Yeah, well, J.K. Rowling said that Dumbledore was gay, but it's like, really? I no clue. Never had a clue Dumbledore was gay and all that. But it's nice to see them just kind of being out there now.
Yeah. I did just get questioned by my 8-year-old yesterday because he heard that Elsa is supposed to be gay in Frozen 2. We saw it, but he said there wasn't enough. Like, he didn't really know. Is
well,
that...
that's interesting. She doesn't have a male counterpart, right? She's just, I haven't
right.
seen Frozen 2, by the way. But...
It's really good.
Okay.
Me neither, but I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't
yeah.
know that either, but yeah. there you go. Wow. Well, that's okay. That's our, this is all progress. This is really amazing. People are listening in cities all over the country. So if you were going to recommend to some moms or parents out there who have LGBT kids, how would you tell them to get started and where to get started?
Sure. Well, come to our website, gendernation.org. We have not only the list of books that we donate to Southern California or to California Public Schools, but also just recommended titles. And this comes from recommendations from Gender Spectrum, from educators here in California, and from parents who've found these books and found them valuable reading them at home. These books are out there. Thank God now this is becoming more
common. Being written. Every day. I just got a preview copy from the guy who wrote the Harvey Milk book, and he just wrote one on Pete Buttigieg, and he wrote one on the first transgender military guy from, like, the Civil War. I mean, they're just constantly creating new content.
That's
really
amazing.
And publishers are doing it now, which is huge.
Yeah. That is really amazing. We have run out of time, but I want to thank you both, Keiko Feldman, Morgan Walsh, for coming on the show. You're incredible mama bears. We're so proud to have you on our side.
Thank you so much, John. It's great to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Next week, gang, we'll have the end of the year. I've got Rance Collins, millennial entertainment expert, and Karen Oakham, lesbian journalist, joining me all 2 hours to wrap up 2019 year in review. We'll see you next week here on Channel Q.